Oh, but you didn't, I haven't showed, didn't show you the miniature.
Today is January the 21st, 2002, and I'm here with Miss Catherine Giles of Versailles, Kentucky. We're working on the Versailles Vision or Main Street Oral History Project. The interviewer is Janet Norris Gates. Now we're ready.
Okay, I was born in Woodford County in 1918. Born at Nonsuch, about a mile, maybe north of, I don't know how the road runs down there, whether it runs east or west, north or south. But anyway, I was born at Nonsuch, and my mother was born at Nonsuch.
And that's in Woodford County,
that's
right?
In Woodford County, southern Woodford County. And but my mother was Sally Ann Wilson, and she married Raymond Earl Weaver, and he was born in Bracken County. But he joined the Nonsuch Presbyterian Church in 1910, he and his family, so apparently they had moved down there earlier, a short while earlier than that. But other than where he was born in Bracken County, I have not been able to find anything because his father died in 1913, so I haven't been able to get any history on him, and I'm still looking for that. But
what do you know their birth dates? When
my mother and father? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mother was born in August 1st of 1996, and Daddy was born
1896?
1896, and Daddy was born in April the 14th of 1897.
Okay.
So that's, and his father was Charles Southward Weaver, and his grandfather was L.D. Weaver. But on his death certificate, it gives Charles Southward's Weaver's mother as Anna Mae Weaver, which was his wife.
Oh, so it's wrong.
It's wrong. So it's hard to find who you're looking for.
That's true when you have mistakes like that.
It is.
Well, now what brought them to Woodford County from Bracken County?
Well, I don't know. I found an on the Soundex, I had heard Daddy talk about Keene, so I thought they lived in Jessamine County. But on the Soundex, it said they lived in Fayette County. Well, of course, Fayette County and Jessamine County are right there side by side, and Keene would be very close. So apparently, they lived somewhere in that area. But I never heard him talk about his relatives because his father died, as I said, when he was in 1913. And then she remarried maybe, I think the 1920 census says she was married to Mr. Crutchfield. And later, maybe in the 20s, some early 20s, they moved to Louisville. And of course, we was living here, and of course, we eventually moved to Louisville. But I never heard them talk about it. And if that kids wouldn't, you wouldn't go ask your grandparents where they came from, but she always said she was from the Bluegrass. She would never say she was from Nonsuch. And she always said she was from Henry County. So I did find where she was born in Henry County, and in she was 15 years old. And she and her mother and one sister were still in Henry County. So how they got to Bracken County or why they got to Bracken County, I have no idea. That's one of my brick walls.
Well, once they came here, what did they do as far as their
farm.
Work?
They
had a farm, okay.
They had a farm, and I was born in their upstairs of their house at that time.
In a house in Nonsuch?
Well, it's about a mile from Nonsuch. But there's a crossroads at Nonsuch, Cummins Ferry, and it was Sellers Mill, I think. Now they call it Ford's Mill. But my grandfather and grandmother Weaver lived on one side, about a mile on one side, and my grandmother Wilson lived a mile on the other side. And then after we did go to Louisville, and after we came back from Louisville, we moved on my grandfather Wilson's farm, which was about a half a mile from the crossroads. But of course, my grandmother Weaver then was still in Louisville. And so it's always been home, Nonsuch is home, even after they tore the church down and got rid of schools. And that was why I built a school. I built the church first. And then I built the blacksmith shop, and then I built the school. But I wanted to save Nonsuch. That was the only way I knew how to save it, was in memory and of building these miniature buildings. But I built those in a quarter inch to a foot.
Oh, you did? They're real specific to the...
Very much so. And people recognize them. Of course, there's not too many to recognize them now because most everybody's gone. Dead. But it was an interesting project. I know it took me 6 months to build the church after I decided it was got started on it.
But now, which church was this?
Not the Nonsuch Presbyterian Church. Okay. And I would call different friends who had gone there, and I said, "Well, do you remember this, or you remember that?" They said, "No, but I remember this one," because we didn't have any pictures.
Oh, there's not any pictures of it?
Only what I took one in 72. My grandchildren and I went down there, and they were tearing the church down, and I didn't even know it, and I went berserk right there. The kids, grandchildren want to know, "Why is she crying? What's wrong?" But there was, it had been stripped inside, and all there was just the outside hull. So I do have a picture of that. And then, of course, I have grandparents and aunts and uncles and great aunts and uncles that are buried in the Nonsuch Cemetery.
Right.
So it's still home, and I still enjoy going down to the cemetery, but I miss the church and miss the school. Of course, the school that I went to is still standing, and the school that Mother and Daddy went to is still standing.
And did they have a name?
Well, they're just Nonsuch schools.
Okay.
So, and I don't know, they built a new school in 1936 and 7, and I think it opened in 37. Mm-hmm. But
now, were their schools like one-room schoolhouses, or?
One of them was one room, and when I went to Nonsuch, it was a two-room, but it had been built in 1912. And it was one room, and then they brought in Mount Edwin and another local school, and they added on to it in 1926. Well, when I went, I just went there a short time in 1932. It was two room. But the funny part was when George Simonis and I went down with the tape measure to measure the school. Well, we measured the old part, and it was 30 feet. And 4 inches. So we measured the back portion. It was 20 feet and 4 inches. We measured across. It was 20 feet or 30 feet and 4 inches. Came out and measured the front porch, and it had a big front porch. It was 20 feet and 4 inches. We measured the steps. They were 10 feet and 4 inches. I still haven't figured out why the 4 inches on everything. The weather boarding on the sides of the building was 4 inches. So by that way, then I could count how many weather strips of weatherboarding was, so I could tell how tall it was. And then I took pictures of up under the eaves and all around the thing to see that it had built-in gutters. And it was an interesting project, but now it took a long time to build, too. It turned into work because there was so much detail in it. But it's still standing, and people, Mrs. Jack Jr., Jack Corman Jr., still lives there. Her husband died.
What's her name?
Corman.
Corman.
Mrs. Jack Corman. She was Ethel T. Bannister, and she married Jack Corman Jr.
Is that with a K or Corman or C?
C. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And but there were people that lived there. But what I remembered about the Nonsuch Church was I'd come visit grandmother. We had moved to Louisville, but I'd come back every summer and spend the whole summer with her. They had the elections in August then, the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have ice cream suppers. And the sun would shine on one side of the building in the morning and on the other side at night. So I guess this road was east, it was north and south from where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
But in the afternoon, the sun was not on the east side of the church, because that's the side the cemetery was on. And that's where they would have the ice cream suppers. And you know, I just think back, there was no paper plates, there was no plastic spoons, there was no tablecloths or nothing. But they'd take all the freezers down there and they'd freeze that ice cream. There was never any bickering. They had to take their own silverware, their own dishes, which meant they had to carry them home because there was no water there. It just amazes me that people could could and would do things would. So like that.
What kind of crowd would did you remember
they
being there?
Big crowds.
Do you think?
Of course, there's been so many of us kids running around.
Right.
That,
would it be more than 50, 100?
Oh, yes. I would say it would at least be 100. And, of course, all of the politicians would come down. Mm-hmm. And I know they never bought me ice cream, but they may have bought the people who could vote. I don't know. But it always amazes when I think back of all the crowds that would be there. And you had all these dishes, and there was no place to water or to wash them. So they had to carry them home right. dirty. And, of course, there was no lights outside. There's no lights inside. And so you had to leave before dark.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the days were longer in the afternoon, in the summer anyway.
What flavors of ice cream? Would it be vanilla or other flavors?
I don't remember. I just remember that they had the ice cream suppers there.
And you said that you had to buy people might buy ice cream. Was it a fundraiser?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have any fundraisers.
Right.
Then anything other than what people, you know, bought, put into collection plate.
What?
Raising money.
How much would a bowl of ice cream be?
I don't have any idea.
I don't remember.
Uh-uh.
How old were you then, you think?
Oh, I could have been anywhere from 10 to 13 or 13.
Because those are the years that you came back
uh-huh,
and visited.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember when you would come visit or when you lived here, going into Versailles? Would you do that?
When we moved back in 1931, December of 31, and I went to the Nonsuch School and graduated, which then they took us to Millville for our graduation exercises.
Oh, did they?
They had a big gym down there, which Nonsuch and Troy didn't have. Well, then the next year, then the fall of 32, well, I started at Troy High School. And, of course, the bus picked us up, and we went down Brushy Run Road, and we went down Monday's Landing Road, clear to the end of it, and back to Troy School. And I went there for 3 years. And then we came to Versailles in 35, the fall of 35, and then...
You came into Versailles to live then?
No, we came into Versailles for high school.
Oh, okay.
And because we still lived in Nonsuch until 37 when we moved to Millville. But I graduated from Versailles High School, but I didn't, but they brought in Millville and Nonsuch that year. I think they had brought in Mortonsville the year before.
Oh, into the city school.
City schools. Well, of course, we were nothing because we were from out in the county. We didn't, you know, and they didn't want to associate with us, which, well, we were just all strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing a bunch of strangers and there's not that much conversation or
mm-hmm.
you just tolerate everybody and that's it. But anyway, I was thinking the other day about when we went to school up there, you had the city's kids went home to lunch because the Versailles was so small.
Right.
And so we got to go to downtown too, but usually we brought our lunch with us. And I remember walking downtown and where now there is the Hillard and Rice Garage. Now the Christian Church has bought it and made that their educational building. There was a log house set right on the street. Now I'm showing you by my hand, but it's not going on whatever there. And this log house, when they stepped out the door, you stepped right on the sidewalk.
Was that right on Main Street?
No, it was on Lexington Street.
Okay.
And right beside of that was a streetcar tracks, interurban tracks. And, of course, behind that was a little office building where you bought your tickets or you
mm-hmm.
sit and wait for the interurban or whatever. But they made a Y or a V going in there because they'd pull in from Lexington, and then there would be one come in from Frankfort because the high school was when I was going to high school in 35 and 36. Well, the interurban had been gone, but the tracks and things still
mm-hmm.
was there. And this little building that had been used as interurban office was in a liquor store, so you walked on by. And then there was a pool room and then there were some other buildings, and of course the corner drug. And the corner drug, I think, is the one thing that has has lasted, has maintained that name. At one time, it went out of business for a short period of time, but somebody came back in and they put it, mm-hmm. signs up as Corner Drug again. So Versailles has really grown. I grew up and we went to lived in Millville, and then I went to Pinkard to live, and then I went to Cincinnati and worked in Cincinnati for a while, and I joined the Army while I was in Cincinnati. But when my husband and I came back from here, came back from the service, I was in the Army in Boston, and he was in the Marines in Seattle. He had been back overseas, and he'd come back.
And this was during what years?
World War II, okay. 44, when we both came back here. And we were married here in Versailles. I was home, I had 7 days, he had 30 days. So then I went back to Seattle. I went back to Boston, he went back to Seattle. But anyway, interesting. But when we came back from here, from the service, then in 45, we moved down on South Main Street, and he bought a pool room down on Lexington Street. And
is it the one you remember being there whenever you were in high school?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. But I don't know who it belonged to then, but when he bought it, it belonged to Mr. Ben Carroll, which was his uncle, and his uncle sold him his part of it. And Herbert Tillman owned half of it. And Herbert didn't keep his part very long. He came out here on Douglas Avenue and bought a store. And Garnet Carroll, so that my husband was with Garnet Carroll, and it was Giles and Carroll's, or Carroll and Giles, whichever way it was. I don't think they ever put up a sign. It was mm-hmm. just the pool room. So, but the children were not permitted to go inside the pool room. That was one thing. The children could not go inside the pool room, even though they served hot dogs and chili, things that kids would like to eat back then.
Whenever you were in high school, could the kids go in the pool?
And they could not go when we came back mm-hmm. here either.
Before we go on any further, let me ask you just a little bit more about when you were young. What's the first time you remember coming to Versailles? Was it when you were in high school? Or?
I really don't remember. I just don't remember.
You know,
I know that when we lived in Louisville, we would come through it, and I've been trying to remember, and I don't remember anything about going mm-hmm. through it. And I don't remember coming up here. I remember one year, I don't know what it was, well, it had to be in 36, that Margaret Schuler lived out on, and she lived out on the South Main Street with Judge Jim Bond, and his wife, who was Josephine Redmond, and Mary the Bond. And we went home with her for lunch. Well, it came such a snowstorm, and Judge Bond come home, and he wouldn't let us go home on the bus. He made us stay. And we were up there a week before we got to go home. And we had not a change of clothes, nothing.
Well, what kind of bus was it? You said we'd go home on the bus. Did they have school buses there?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. But they were not big, nice buses like they are now. They was kind of rattletrap, an extended the Model T Ford that had a roof over it, mm-hmm. the sides and whatever. And it was a pretty good bus, and Vernon Kearns drove that bus. But Judge Bond would not let us go home. And about a week later, when the snow begun to get off just a little bit, he went to work. And somebody that we knew come by, and we got in the car and left, went home.
I wonder what your parents thought about that. I mean, they knew where you were?
No, because we didn't have a phone.
Right.
But to my knowledge, they never questioned it. I was with Judge Bond.
Right.
And anything that he did was fine.
Did they know that you were going home to lunch with her that day?
I'm sure that they did.
We had planned it ahead of time.
But they didn't know that we weren't coming home on the bus. And I just think about it, that there was no phone. It was there was a phone at the store. And, of course, Judge Bond had a phone. So maybe Margaret Corman called her mother and them, or called the store and told them to tell someone when they come in the store, and sent the word on after mother and them. I don't know. I just don't remember. But I just remember that we had to stay that whole week because he wouldn't let us go.
Do you know what month that was?
It had to be January or February.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know if you were getting snows then, you know, yeah, early, like in November and December,
too. No, it was after the first year.
And you said she called the store. The store had a phone.
There was a store at Nonsuch, and it had a phone. And it belonged to, Holloway Carter at that time. So, and of course, Margaret lived right in a hollering distance from the store to the house. So, and her daddy would have been in and out the store every day. And my daddy wouldn't have been, but half a mile, if you didn't have anything to go to the store for, you didn't go.
Right.
But I don't remember too much about Versailles back then. I remember just when after we came back in 45, that the sign out on the road here said 2,400 people.
Okay.
And there was no bypass. There were no subdivisions. And there was, these houses here on Kilmer were not here at all.
Mm-hmm.
This was farmland. And there were no houses up on Boston Drive. All that land belonged to Dr. Blackburn, which was on over to Blackburn Court. And there was just so much, has been so many people added, or so many houses added, and it's just unbelievable. Well, the house where we've had to spend that week, they tore that down just within the last 5 years, I guess. And they put a street up through it. That's where South Hills Drive is. And there's all subdivision out behind that now.
But when you went there that day and got snowed in, you had left your high school and gone there for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the high school located? I don't know Versailles very well, so.
It's located on the corner of Maple and Lexington Street.
Is it still there?
The building is still there. They use it as a middle school now.
Okay.
Yeah,
so it was walking distance from downtown.
Yes, Well, at that time, anything you did, it was walking distance.
Because there weren't, all the houses, anybody who lived in Versailles lived close to downtown.
Within a mile. Well, when they first started running the buses, if you lived within a mile, you walked. And at that time, we lived down on the corner of Douglas and Mulkey. They've since changed the name of it to Cleveland. And my children lived just in a mile, so they got to ride the school buses. And then when they moved the school out on Lawrenceburg Road, which was Simmons School, they named it Simmons, it was 2 miles from where we lived out there. So, of course, by that time, the girls was in high school, or graduated. You did not. If you lived within a mile of school,
you walked.
Well,
tell me a little bit about you. You said when we moved here, how many was in your family? Did you have brothers and sisters? And when you said we moved to Louisville and then we moved back,
I had one sister when we moved to Louisville. She was about a year old, maybe. She was born 1920. And
okay.
We moved shortly after that, and then when we moved back, then I had two brothers. I had a brother born in 23 and one born in 25.
Okay. What are their names?
Raymond and Charles. And they're gone, and my sister's gone, so I'm the only ones left.
And your sister's name was?
Grace.
What was your last name, your maiden
Weaver.
Name? Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
You've said that. I just wanted to.
Yes, Weaver.
Okay. Now, what was the purpose of when you did move to Louisville? Why did you, was it work? Was it work-related?
I suppose so. Of course, my daddy's sister, Pearl, and her family were in Louisville, and his mother and stepfather had already moved to Louisville. And I don't know at the time whether they had sold the farm, but apparently they had. That's so much of the history that I don't know. That's the reason I keep going back and checking on wills and deeds and whatever, trying to see what, and a lot of it I have not gotten around to checking.
Yeah, it's a lot of information to try to find out, isn't it? When you came back here, when your family came from Louisville back, what did your father do for work?
Well, this was during the Depression. And you did anything you could.
Mm-hmm.
He had worked for at that time was a mingled body company, I think, which made bodies for automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
But they were made out of wood. They were not made out of metal like they are now. And so there was, and during the Depression, there was no need for it. And they went to Michigan, but the company, what was closed in Louisville, and went to Michigan.
Oh, okay.
So he didn't want to go to Michigan. And
So he did that when he was in Louisville, mm-hmm. worked for the Mingle mm-hmm. plant.
But, I mean, before we left Louisville, well, he was just picking up anything that you could
right.
could get, which wasn't a whole lot, because there was people jumping out of windows and committing suicide and
yeah.
just doing anything. To
do you remember that? You know, remember, have memories of it being hard times?
Yes,
and
yes.
How old were you then? When
I was less than 13, because I was 13 when I moved back mm-hmm. up here, so I've been 11, 12, 13.
Were you living then with his relatives when
no,
you went
no,
to Louisville?
No, we
you
never lived with, we
okay.
didn't live with them, but...
you had rented a house, maybe, or bought
well,
a house?
Well, we had a house, had one house, that, but it was in town, and he thought he could do better if he could go out on the farm and raise his crop or raise something edible.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray had, I know he had some hogs that was well over away from the house, but you could raise a garden and whatever, and he'd been raised on a farm, so
right.
the farm was supporting, self-supporting. You could support yourself mm-hmm. if you got out and worked. But... I remember one morning he went over to feed the hogs and they'd all disappeared. And you follow this trail and there was the blood where somebody killed them and took them away.
Oh.
They was in hard times for them too, but that made it harder on us too, because that was what he was expecting to do, was
sure.
to get the hogs for the meat. But anyway, because we didn't have enough money to make the payment on the house, and whoever was renting it, apparently, I don't know whether they had pay the rent or what, but it was not enough money. But I know all I can remember is they said, well, for $200 they lost the house. For the lack
oh,
of $200
mm-hmm,
they lost the house.
Mm-hmm.
But we was living in a 7-room house in Louisville. And we moved to the country, moved up to Nonsuch, and we had a 3-room house. So that made it a
big
little
change.
Tight.
Yeah.
A little tight. But you know, those actually look back, and I think that those were the happiest times, because I loved Nonsuch anyway. I loved grandmother, and all of mother's brothers and sisters was
mm-hmm.
all over the area. Within within 5 miles, all of them lived within 5 or 6 miles. So you could walk. You didn't walk that far, but anyway, it was close enough that you could visit
mm-hmm.
and
get together.
Oh, yes. I mean, and they never... There was no phones. They didn't say, I'll come in on a Sunday, or I'll come. And I don't know where the food came from. I look back and wonder, and I know some of us, George Simonis is one that, and some of the others that used to visit, and they say, you just wonder where they got the food. But if you had nothing but dried beans, everybody ate dried beans
mm-hmm.
and was delighted to have dried beans.
Right.
It was just a wonderful period. And you went to church. You all went to the same school, and you just got along.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nowadays, you can't get along with in your own house.
Sometimes
I have trouble, and I live by myself.
But so you don't remember as a child living in Nonsuch and coming to Versailles until you went to high school?
No, mm-hmm. I don't.
Okay.
I know that I remember enough to know that I don't know what mother would, what mother had to be grandmother named, that would bring their cream to Versailles. And there was Mrs. Ed Dozier. I had a cream station. It was right on the corner of Rose Hill and Main Street. I think there was a service station on the corner, but right behind that
mm-hmm.
was where she lived. And I can remember coming in there, but I don't. And I also remember us grandmother taking the cream and milk to Wilmore, and her eggs and stuff to sell. But I don't remember much about Wilmore other than that there were stone buildings
mm-hmm.
and a railroad track. I don't remember much about that either.
Did you come with your grandmother sometimes to bring the cream
well,
in?
Well, we had to, because we didn't have any car. Our car had give out.
Right.
It got us up here,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't last, and it was a Model A Ford, because it had the three pedals in the floor.
I don't know, but so she had a farm where she raised dairy and had milk.
Yes, well,
and chickens.
Uh-huh.
And so she bring the cream into someone in Versailles, uh-huh. and they'd make butter and sell it or something?
No, they just sold the cream. Because now that's what I remember coming from Louisville to Versailles, when we'd come along where these interurban stations were, because mm-hmm. they was along on the side of the highway, and you'd see these big cream cans sitting there where they had picked them up and taken to a dairy. It had to be in maybe Louisville. And so that I don't know where they took it from here, probably from Lexington. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there would have been a creamery of some sort in Lexington.
Hmm.
And there may have been one in Frankfurt, I don't know.
So people would buy the cream from somewhere, uh-huh. and they'd go home and make their own butter, I guess?
Uh-huh. Well, they would buy the cream, and they would take it to these creameries, and the creamery would make it.
Oh, okay.
Or I guess it was called a creamery. Of course, and then when we came back, after we come back for sales, my husband and I, well, there was a creamery station. I think Miss Dozier still had hers, but Jimmy Olson had one in one of the stores on Main Street, up further on Main mm-hmm. Street. But now, I don't know how, it didn't last too long, I guess, after we got back, maybe 5 to 10 years.
So you said Miss Dozier, was that spelled D-O?
D-O-Z-I-E.
Okay. She still had hers when you came back uh-huh. in 40, after the war?
In 45, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So many things have changed, and they changed so fast after the war that it's unbelievable, because I got to thinking about, there was, what they have, 7 grocery stores on Main Street. Which is unbelievable when you think back. There were 7 grocery stores on Main Street.
At what time?
This was in
45. Mm-hmm.
And then there was one, Glasses was right on the corner of Main and Lexington. And then there was a Kroger store on Main Street. Which is funny, there have been 5 Kroger stores in Versailles since I've come back to Versailles. And there was an A&P store on Main Street. And then they moved down on the corner of Lexington and Locust. And then there was Howard's Grocery, and they delivered groceries. That's what, and I expected Blackburn's did too. And then they'd become J's, and Howard's Grocery become J's, and then become C&D. And they were still delivering groceries when they went out of business, which hasn't been too many years ago. And George Gould had a meat store down on the corner of Morgan and Main Street. And then Blackburn's had a grocery down there. And Mr. and Ms. Will Hayden had a grocery on Main Street. And now they sold clothing. They sold groceries. And they sold other things, because I know one year I bought my mother electric floor lamp
mm-hmm.
for Christmas. And that's where I got it. And I know I bought the girls a big red metal wagon at their store. So they had a big store. And
that was Hayden's?
Hayden, uh-huh. H-A-Y-D-O-N-S. And so that was the 7 grocery stores.
So this was really thriving at that point, because
there was 3 clothing stores. There was 1 men's store, which was Maston's. And it just had, and then the Barnes bought it, and then the Sutherlands bought it. And there was Moosnick's. Now they carried both men's and women's clothing.
How do you spell that?
Oh, I spelled it M-O-O-S-N-I-C-K.
Okay.
Have you seen in the paper or heard of Dr. Franklin Moosnick? He's a heart specialist in Lexington.
No.
Well, anyway, he's one of their sons. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as I said, Hayden's had clothing. So that was the 3 clothing stores. So it was, but there was, we had a post office. We had a funeral home right on Main Street. It was just a little shotgun building, mm-hmm. but he was the funeral director. Of course, back then, you either had the funerals in the church or you had them at home.
Mm-hmm.
So that was,
so they didn't need such a big building.
They didn't need it like they do now. Now everything is at the funeral home, so it doesn't interfere with your living, I guess. Yeah. I guess it's only way you say it. But we even had a movie down on Main Street. Now, I do remember coming to the movie.
How early back do you remember coming to the movie?
Well, I had to have been 14, 15 years old.
And so you'd come into Versailles to go to the movie.
I'd come to the movie, but that was it. You'd come to the movie and you went home.
Was it on Saturday? So when would you come in? Do you know?
Well, it depend on who the boy was and how much, how he had 30 cents for it, because it probably cost 15 cents to go to the movie. Mm-hmm. But, of course, the fire department, I think there one time there was a fire department down on Court Street, but when I came to Forsyth, well, it was on Locust. But we had two banks. One of them had gone kaput, Amston, when the Depression hit, it went out. And then we had the Woodford and the Harris Sellers Bank, which were both on Main Street. Well, since then, the Woodford Bank bought the buildings behind it, which had belonged to Dr. McCauley, which that's another thing of all the doctors. And then they bought the United Bank and went in there, and then just last 2 years they sold it out to Community Trust. But they, and now there's, I think there must be about five banks in Forsyth, more banks than there's money. But then, of course, there was a paint store on Main Street. Mr. and Ms. Clarence Burke had a paint store. And for some reason, that's where they kept the birth certificates. And then when they went out, well, then they shipped them all to Frankfurt, so they've been in Frankfurt ever since.
At the paint store?
At the paint store. And I just wondered why that they...
I wonder, too.
...had permitted them to have them. Just somebody that would take care of them, I guess. But we had the main telephone was on Main Street. The telephone office was on Main Street. Mm-hmm. And
this is all you remember in it when you came back in 45, yeah. Right?
But I don't remember where we paid the water bill or the electric bill. I have no idea. It's as blank can be. But I know that the water company, after the post office went out, they put that down on Main Street. And the electric company, well, they moved that over where the old interurban station had been. They built a big building there and built this big building. And now, of course, it's moved again. And I think that they use it as a daycare for adult, for senior citizens.
Okay. We'll wait just a second, let the clock get over. That's a pretty sound.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a jail right on, just down behind the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the jailer's house was right next to that. It looked like it was all in the same building. But we're talking about the doctors, mentioned the doctors a while ago. There was Dr. Holt and Dr. McCauley and Dr. Blackburn and Dr. Parrott that I remember. I don't remember but those four. But then after we came back here, within the next year, well, we had Dr. Willie and Dr. Hall and Dr. Grawl and Dr. Reed. And by that time, Dr. Holt had died. But we had two dentists at the time. I mean, it was a thriving.
Sounds like it.
And it was all on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And people were well taken care of. But anyway, Dr. Frankie Watts came right after we came. He had been in the service when he got out, well, he started a station, dental office. But it was just so much different from what it is now that it's unbelievable.
Well, let me ask you, just go back, and you remember that about coming in for the movie. Do you remember what the movie theater was called?
Lyric.
Lyric,
mm-hmm.
LYRIC.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember any of the movies that you've ever, that, you know, what would you see? What?
I don't remember.
But you'd come in you were dating then?
Yes,
you,
Excuse me.
We'll pause for the phone. Okay, we're back after the telephone call and a break. looking around her house at her miniatures that she's built and pictures on her walls. I'd ask you about the theater. Let's just think just for a minute way back, you know, that far, because
yeah.
That's probably your earliest memory then,
yes.
Besides the creamery of coming
and
to Versailles, right?
School, the things that, as I saw, when I was going to school. But when I was going to the theater, I don't know whether I was going to school up here then or not. I probably was in 35 and 36.
Okay, you were
in
school.
I don't know how many years that stayed in the movie stayed down on Main Street for several years because they built up on Lexington Street across from the pool room, and there was a pool room there beside of it too. But then they turned that into social services offices.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I don't know that there's anything in there now.
Well, whenever you were going to the theater or the movie theater to see the movies, do you remember if, you know, the blacks in town were allowed to go
no,
or not?
If they did, they went up in a balcony.
Mm-hmm. Did it have a balcony?
Yes. Yeah. And then the new one that they built had a balcony also.
So even after they built the new one, when would that have been? 40s or
well,
earlier?
The girl, let's see, we were here 7 years before 45, 52. So they had probably built it in the 50s.
Okay.
Or the 50s.
And it was still segregated then, too.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Uh huh. Yeah, because they didn't, I don't know what, when they did, when the segregation, when they let children go to the white schools.
Yeah, the exact year, I'm not sure about which counties did what, but it was in the middle 50s.
I know, we lived down here, and we had moved down here on the corner of Douglas and Mulkey, which is now Cleveland. And as I said, my children got to ride the school bus because they lived a mile away. But the colored children who lived out here in mm-hmm. Russelltown, they didn't get to ride the school bus. And I would get so mad because those kids had to walk to school and mine didn't
mm-hmm.
get to ride. Well, of course, eventually they all got to ride after they moved Simmons out on Lawrenceburg Road. But I would be so mad because those children had to walk in the rain and the snow, and mine got to ride.
Well, they weren't going to the same school, though.
No,
right?
They yeah. were going. There was a strictly colored
right.
school called Simmons. And those children had the prettiest handwriting, and the adult children or adult colored people who went there at the school, they had the best handwriting, and they had the nicest professor, Professor Christie, and he was just wonderful. He'd come in and the stove where we had, and he was just absolutely wonderful. And the children were all well behaved.
Mm-hmm.
And we never had, after 7 years in the pool room, well, we bought a grocery store down here on the corner of Douglas and Mulkey.
What was the name of that?
Giles Grocery.
Okay.
It hasn't been Giles Grocery for 26 or 27 years, but people still call it those who were kids and came in there. Of course, there was no bypass. And so the Russelltown, which is east of the store, they would, when they, to come to town, they had to come through mm-hmm. that way. And of course, they would stop at the store. There was wonderful colored people out there. And I guess there still are. I just don't know them now.
Right. Do you think that that's why there were so many stores and businesses on Main Street? Because there wasn't any other street. If
uh-huh.
you came through Versailles, you had uh-huh. to come that way.
Yeah. And not only that, about 12, 13 miles to Frankfort, and it was 12 miles or something from here to Lexington, and to which Nicholasville would probably have been further, and Wilmore. So that was, with each little town had their own. Because
mm-hmm.
I know now I used to go to Nicholasville a lot with dating, and they had a movie on Main Street over there too. And everything, their grocery stores and everything was on Main Street.
Yeah, so Main Street was really important to
that's right.
to cities,
uh-huh.
more so than they are now. But it seems like Versailles has kept their, you know, it still looks like an old Main
yeah,
Street.
It looks
and when is that effort? Has it always, people always been really proud and tried to keep it up? Or was there a period where it ran down and they've...
Well, I think it was all on Main Street until they built the bypass.
Mm-hmm.
And then they built, they went out on the bypass and they built they didn't build any shopping, nothing out there at that time. They built the bank first, I think. And then they built Rand McNally and International Paper bought a place there on the corner. And they bought, it was all farmland, belonged to Mr. Hardin Fields.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all farmland, and they bought that.
And started putting some industry in there.
Uh-huh.
When would that have been?
Well, the bypass was built in 58 or 9. Because I remember one time my husband was going to take us a ride out that way to show us, and we had the son who was now 43, and so he was born in 59, so it was after that.
Okay.
And where this railroad track is, where I told you that you would come across the railroad track, there were two or three houses that sat between that. Where,
okay.
Because there's my husband and the girls and the young son was going out to look at the new highway that they were building, and we turned left, like we was to Frankfurt, and we got up on top of this big hill. Well, if you think about it, they cleared that hill out. They just made a. Because there's my husband and the girls and the young son was going out to look at the new highway that they were building, and we turned left, like we was going to Frankfurt, and we got up on top of this big hill. Well, if you think about it, they cleared that hill out. They just made a cut through and where the road is now. And you got up on this hill, and there was nothing but a drop off on the other side. Good thing we didn't go on and drive on through, but he was driving slow, so we didn't do that. But it was in the late 50s.
Okay.
But you know, then there was a colored woman that got Nanny, I don't remember what her last name was, and she got killed out there trying to cross that bypass after her, because the cars were faster and fast, mm-hmm. and she was slower. And
she was walking across?
Yes, they used to walk, and they still walk across.
Mm-hmm.
And there are buttons to push, but if a car is coming down there 60 miles an hour, right. they're not going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, at that time, there was only one stoplight, and that was at the right at there, Douglas Avenue.
Okay.
And Big St. Pike. And then there's been several car wrecks, and there was some young people killed out there one time that I don't know whether they was on, I don't know which road they was on, but anyway, they got hit and mm-hmm. they were killed. And here, not too long ago, the Wadsters was in a wreck, and they got beat up pretty bad too, from because they don't stop, they're coming so fast,
right.
and even though I think the speed limit says, I think it said 45, and somebody else said one end of it may say 55, but I think that's what they try to come. But you can hear the tires squealing and screeching and carrying on, so you know, somebody's,
yes,
sometimes you hear a bang.
Well, let's talk about when you and your husband met then, because you said he was from Woodford County,
yes,
too. Give me his name and his birthday.
His name was Stanley Giles, and his birthday was December the 26th, 1915. And we met at my house. He was living with his uncle, Charlie Groves, and his aunt, Xenia Leigh Groves. And my daddy was, it was in June or July, whenever they were cutting wheat, and
mm-hmm.
he had Mr. Groves' binder, and they came over to the house to cut the wheat. And so and Mrs. Groves came and had lunch with us that day, and of course Stanley came too, and because he was cutting the wheat, and my brothers was helping shock the wheat, and so was Daddy. And then you traded work backwards and forth.
Mm-hmm.
If your neighbors had something, well, then you had something else, and you traded backwards and forth with them, which they don't do nowadays. I was trying to explain to my son the other night about the threshing machines that used to go from farm to farm,
mm-hmm.
and how each farm that they was on, that family would prepare the meal for all of the thresher hands. And
so you would feed them when they came,
yes,
to
uh-huh.
help you thresh?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you remember helping out with that? Did you help cook? And
yeah, I remember once or twice when we lived at Nunsuch that the thresher come and stopped at our house.
Mm-hmm.
Thresh the wheat, and it was just, well, you'd have a whole lot of course, they were using horse and wagons to haul the thing, and then you'd have to have somebody there bagging the wheat, and then, of course, the straw was going another direction. And I remember seeing them up at my grandmother's, and she always did that, too.
Mm-hmm. That would, the men usually do that type of work, and then the women,
yes,
would prepare
food,
the meal?
Uh-huh. I don't remember if they ever took any tables or anything. They just took the food and the plates. Now, again, there you had your plates.
They would take the food out to them?
Yes.
In the field?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In baskets, I guess? Or
I don't remember how they got it out.
Yeah.
It's funny how you can pick out, you remember one little thing out of a scene, and that's the end of that.
So you remember meeting your husband. Now, tell me a little bit about that. Did y'all just were friends for a while, or did you start dating right away? Or
We started, I was going to Millville Christian Church. It was, I had met the Watts family, and Mrs. Watts was a lovely lady, and of course she invited me to go to church, so that's where I went, because there was no Presbyterian church there. It was a Baptist and a Christian, so she invited me, so that's where we went. And so he, and I think, if I remember correctly, his father had been a member there, but he had never gone, as to my knowledge, as long as I didn't ever heard anybody say anything. And even after we married, he never went there. So, but he did, I think he belonged maybe to Choatesville Church eventually, after he they moved in that area. Mr. Giles' family moved in that area. But and then he went off to service in six. Well, the next October he went off to service.
Your husband did?
39 he went off to service. So then he didn't come back here till 44.
And you all just kept in touch with each other, correspondent, and then did you write each other letters?
Yes.
And then whenever you'd be home?
Well, he came home, I think, in 41 before the war was declared. And, of course, he came a couple of times. Because I know he gave me the ring, but mother and daddy moved in 41 from Millville to Pinkard, and I know it was at Pinkard that we lived in Pinkard when he gave me the ring. So
he gave you the ring. What do you mean by that?
No, ain't this one, because the ring has worn out, both of them, the wedding ring and the engagement ring too.
So he proposed to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to tell that on tape how he?
Well,
I don't
remember nothing about it other than he just gave me the ring.
Okay, okay.
But
now, is that before you had joined the Army?
Oh, yes.
So you were engaged, but you didn't get married until, and then what made you decide to join the Army?
Well, I guess just being patriotic and just hearing Kate Smith and her God Bless America and that the Japanese were fighting and you wanted to help any way you could, and if that was the best way that you could help, well, that's what you did.
So how old were you then?
I would have been 21 then.
And what had you done between the time you graduated high school and you that time?
Well, I had worked. I'd gone to school after college when I graduated from high school. But I was a little on the lazy side, I guess. I told a friend that I went to high school with, I said, he was interested in the bees, and so was I. But his was academic bees, and mine was boys. So that ended that.
Where did you go to college?
UK.
And you went there for just a few years?
A short period.
Okay.
And then I worked at LeBron Grimm Distillery, and I worked at...
here in Woodford County.
Which is at Millville. And I worked at Ashland Laundry, which was in Lexington. And I worked at for Seal Test out in Newport. My sister got married, Grace, married Bill Hedges from Millville. And he had an aunt who lived in Cincinnati. Well, after they went out there and stayed a while, of course, he got a job right away, and she got a job. So they wanted me to come out. Well, I went out, and then I got a job over in Newport with the same company he was with, which is Seal Test. And then we all moved, the three of us then moved to Newport, which is...
And that's Newport, Kentucky, right?
And then while I was there, well, I joined the... Well, I think he... I think he had to go in the service before I did.
Your sister's husband?
Uh-huh. And, of course, she came home with mother and daddy over at Pinkard. And so I went into the service. But
so you went into the service. Where were you based?
Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia.
In Georgia. And you were in the service for how long?
About 14 months, which was not long, but... I've stayed there until October of 43, and then I went to Camp Edwards, Massachusetts, and stayed up there, I don't know, then I went to Boston, and then they sent me to recruiting school, which is in Fort Washington, Maryland, and then I went back to Boston. But I was a truck driver when I was in Camp Fort Oglethorpe. Well, they put me in the motor transport school, and you learned how to change tires, and you learned how to change the oil, and you learned how to do the motors and just check them out, all out and everything. And I loved it. And of course, then when you was in Georgia, you just you were still on the base. Excuse me. And you was delivering groceries from mess hall to mess hall, which after we'd gotten through the 6 weeks of training for parking, the one thing they taught you to drive was to do was to drive and to park these bigger trucks, how to park in between posts and all that kind of stuff, so that you could back into anything and without destroying it. It makes me so mad now when I don't know how to park. Old age will do that to you. But then when I went to Camp Edwards, well, I was still driving the truck, but then they put me to driving a car, and I loved that, and I was driving for a Mr. Thornhill, Walter Thornhill, and he had been in World War II and in the Navy over in France, and he said that the people, the French people, were so good to him that he said, if I ever get a chance to be do that for somebody, I'm going to. So whenever, now he was a civilian, but we had a lot of civilian personnel working on the Army post, and so you had to have somebody checking on them all the time. And if they called in sick or something, well, he was sent out to check on them. And of course, he had to have somebody else go with him, especially if it was a woman. He had to have somebody go to check to see that they were sick or not. And so he would take a route, one route to go and another route to come back, which was not much more mileage or any more mileage, but still it gave me a chance to see a lot of Massachusetts in that area, which I loved.
Yeah, I bet.
And
well, while you were in the Army, did you come back to Kentucky and visit?
No, I never got back.
Okay.
Until I come back and got married, and then
I was wondering what the climate was here during the World War II in Versailles, you know, what people were doing.
I don't know. I know that before you went in, everything was rationed, and that you couldn't buy tires, and you couldn't buy coal, you couldn't buy anything. Lard, you couldn't buy sugar, you couldn't buy anything. And I've still got my ration card that I got after I got out of service, because before I went in, we didn't have ration cards or ration books. But I know when we came back here, in September of 45, he needed a new tire. Well, they didn't want to sell him a tire. Well, where have you been? You know, you don't need a... Well, he was home from Seattle, and he got so mad because they wouldn't give him a tire or let him give him a thing to buy a tire. And then when we came back here in 45, I was still here because he got out in October, and it was November time he got back. We needed coal, something to burn, because you didn't have gas where we moved to. And they didn't want to send me coal. Where have you been? What have you know?
Because he was new. He was just coming back. He wasn't a... So they didn't want to give him his rations for... Did you get him according to what city you lived in or the county or...
You had to go through a whole lot of rigmarole before you could get it because... or know somebody.
Oh, okay. At that point, you didn't know the right person to get it right away?
Because he'd been gone from 39 to 44. And
I bet that was frustrating, wasn't it?
He'd been over in Guadalcanal and...
He'd been
the islands fighting the Japanese, and the thing. Then they'd come home and say, you know, you've been over there protecting, trying to protect them and their business, and here they won't even let you have anything.
Well, how did you wind up getting coal?
He had an uncle that said, just calm down. I will take care of it. Just calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got about the rest of the details. I don't know because I wasn't let in on that, but I know he'd come home. He would just rant.
He was very angry. I could see why. Now, you moved to a house in Versailles when you came back.
Yes,
is that right?
It was on the outer skirts of South Main. And it was, actually, I guess it would have been just outside the city limits. But Britton, Jesse Britton and his wife, Geneva Dozier, the one that had run the milk cream station, mm-hmm. was her daughter, lived in a house. And they moved into two rooms and they let us have three.
Okay.
So, and then of course the bathroom was in my section of the house, so when they went to the bathroom,
they had to come in. So you were sharing a house with another family. Mm-hmm. And you both were renting it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Renting it from his mother and father.
Okay.
But we lived out there about 9 months, and then we bought a house out here on the corner of Douglas and Mulkey Avenue. That's what our deed said, was Mulkey Avenue.
So within that 9 months, is that when he bought the pool room?
He bought the pool room as soon as he got back.
Now, how did he fund that?
Well, he had sent me money mm-hmm. while he was overseas, and I put it in the bank.
So he paid for it with cash? He didn't have to get a loan or anything for it? And then he opened the, now, you know, was that a thriving business? He did well with the pool hall?
Mm-hmm.
People would come in there to do what?
Play pool.
And
drink,
mm-hmm.
have chili. Of course, it was only strictly men. And there was a lot of men were coming back at that time in 45. A lot mm-hmm. of them had come back because the war was over in Germany. And it was, I guess by that time it was also over in Japan, but there were so many of them that were back, and they all was drawing, or their head, their dis, what kind of,
like their GI bill or something.
No, it was their the pay that they got when they got out.
Okay.
And there was jobs, and there was work to do, and they were all of the servicemen were close knit people when they came back here. They had all been through a very traumatic experience,
sure.
and they were all close. And if they walked outside the pool rooms, or even into their families, they did not understand what they had been through.
Right.
And so it was a gathering place and a place to let off steam. And if they talked, it was about the service. Well, I mean, this guy understood, or that guy,
mm-hmm.
they all understood each other.
Okay, I see. So it was kind of a community gathering for them.
Yeah,
to...
And of course, there was also another pool room across the street. But
did it have the same type of clientele?
I don't know. I just don't know about what they had over there.
When would be his busiest times? Would they come in on lunch? They'd come in after work? Or
of course, the busiest times was at night and Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people at that time, they didn't work Saturdays, and they did not have anything open on Sunday.
Nothing.
There was only one store of the seven, and I don't think I mentioned her store, because I thought I was going to do that. I mentioned that there was seven stores on Main Street. Well, Miss Anna Mae Weber had a store on Rose Hill, which was right off of Main Street,
mm-hmm.
and she was the only store in town that was open on Sunday.
Well, how did she get to do that?
Well, I don't know.
It was like a grocery store?
It was a grocery store. I never was in it, but I know that if we run out of a loaf of bread, they'd always go down to Miss Anna Mae Weber's and get a loaf of bread or something. But she was the only one that was left open on Sunday.
Well, that's interesting.
But it wasn't. Well, it was several years, though, before they started leaving, having stores and things open.
Was it because there was a law? There was a blue law?
There was a blue law,
mm-hmm.
yes.
I wonder how she kept hers open then. That's interesting.
I don't know. I just know that she was an older woman, and I don't think she, from what I've heard, that she didn't even have to get up and ask or wait on people if you wanted it, you got it, and you brought it to her, and she took your money.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know.
Yeah, just... So getting back to your husband's business, within the business community, you know, was there organizations that, like there are now, Kiwanis Clubs?
Yes.
Do you remember, did your husband participate in those and be a part? So what were...
I think maybe he may have joined the American Legion.
Okay.
And I did too, I belonged to the Legion, but I also belonged to the Auxiliary.
And were those based downtown? Would you have meetings downtown in different buildings? Or?
They had an American Legion hall out on, it was on, down on South Main, which now is where the convenience store is. And I remember going to I can remember one meeting particular that of the Auxiliary, which met at Mrs. Dr. Blackburn's, I don't remember what her first name was, Laura probably, up at her home.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they met at the homes.
And now what was the Auxiliary? Who was that for?
It was the American Legion.
So it was the wives or people who...
But I know she was from World War I.
Okay.
So they had carried it through.
Oh, all right.
All mm-hmm. those years. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's still American Legion Auxiliary, but I don't belong to either one of them. I just...
Okay.
You get to the point that, well, by that time I had two children, and you don't get to go as much, mm-hmm. and you got to stay home and take care of the children. And
during those first years when you moved here, were you working? Were you...
No, only with the children.
Yeah, you had had children. What? Mm-hmm. When did you have your first child?
In 45.
And so you just stayed, you were a full-time mother then, working really hard. And,
yes, uh-huh.
And you said...
And then you didn't have washing machines. You did the diapers by hand. Mm, you did this, that, and other.
Gosh.
Yes.
I can't imagine doing that. We have some...
Now it's a throwaway.
Well, I tried to use cloth with my kids, but yeah, most people use the disposable.
They do now. And they wonder why things are so expensive. Mm-hmm. Well, for one thing, they're pretty expensive.
Right. Right, yeah. So your husband would, tell me something about his work hours then. Would he go in?
Well, they finally worked it out. One day he went in at noon.
Speaking of noon.
Is it noon? It is. One day he would go in at noon and he would work till midnight.
Okay.
Well, the next day he would go in at 6.
In the morning?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And work till noon.
Okay.
It was a kind of people talk about a regular home and regular meals and a regular this, that, and that. I said, I have never had a regular.
Not with that kind of schedule. You couldn't, could you?
As long as I've been married. It's just
mm-hmm.
because of the.
Now, why would he open up so early at 6 in the morning? Did they serve breakfast too?
People were in there.
They were in there playing pool.
You'd have to be cleaning it by the time you'd start. 50 pound of hamburgers to make chili.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would take quite a while to get it all going and get everything, make sure that everything was cleaned up and ready to. So I guess they start because they had coffee.
Yeah.
So they'd start coming in as soon as.
Did now he bought that with another gentleman, right?
Yes.
Was it already in a pool hall and he?
Yeah, before, it was already a pool hall.
Yeah, he just
and
bought.
It belonged to his uncle Ben Carroll. And Mr. Carroll had sold a part of it to, half of it to Herb Tillman.
You said that already, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then Stanley bought Mr. Carroll's half, and then after a while, Herbert wanted to get out and buy a grocery store. And he bought the grocery store down on the corner of Douglas and Mulkey. And then Garnet Carroll bought Mr. Tillman's half. Well, then... 7 years later, well, I don't know what 7 years later, we bought the store from Mr. Tillman again.
Okay. The store that he had opened, you bought the grocery store.
It had already been opened.
Okay, well, pick up here.
The store had been a house, and it was like a shotgun house. And when Mr. Tillman bought it, it was just this one room that Mr. Goins had as a store. And it was dark and... with the one little light hanging down in the middle of the floor, and of course it even had a coal stove in the middle, And at the end of that room, there was a flue where, and I think Mr. Goins lived upstairs over the store, in that back room over the store. But then when Mr. Earl Tillman, which was Herbert's brother, come in with him, well, he insisted that they take this partition out. So then they had to put a gas furnace in. And so they had the store for several years. And while he was there, he built a boat upstairs in this over the store.
He built a boat
inside? Built a boat. And then the boat was so big that he couldn't get it out the windows or out the door or anything. So he had to take it apart before he could get it out.
What kind of boat?
Just a John boat.
Oh, my gosh. That wasn't very smart, was it?
So then they sold it to Emmett Tillman, which was a nephew or a cousin. And they had it, and they lived upstairs over the store. But they had the two rooms and the two rooms upstairs. So then when we bought it, I'd say in the 50, maybe 52, well, then my husband added a whole new side to it and doubled the size of the store.
And put
We built it on. And then added a porch, and of course there was gas pumps out in front of it. And then later we had new gas pumps put in, but we never used upstairs. We used for anything except storage, extra storage. And we stayed there until 76, November of 76. And he had a ruptured esophagus in 73. And
your husband had?
Was in the hospital off and on for several years. And so then I was trying to run it from 8 in the morning till 8 at night and keep the boys in school and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So finally it just got too much, so we just let it, we sold it. We sold it that they would just pay us so much per month. See, and well, the guy kept it, Mr. Behrman kept it about a year. And then he sold it to Mr. Cunningham. Well, then we took, they had to pay all of it then.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Cunningham had it, and then a Mr. Gauntz had it, and now I think that there's somebody, Mr. Huff had it. And then a Mr. Gauntz. And then now I think Mr. Rice has got it, but now it's a, he has a deli.
Okay.
And he said he was doing real well, so I hope he is.
Yeah. But that's neat that it stayed in business that time.
If you tore the building down, we wanted to tear it down and put a big metal building store there. But if you tore it down, you could not replace it. City laws that you couldn't, was zoned housing.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And you couldn't do it. So we just had added on, but that was it. We couldn't add any more. We couldn't make it any bigger. And of course, it got to the point that the wholesalers didn't want to sell you anything. You had to buy $5,000 worth a week, or else they wouldn't come. And being a mom and pop store, and being a community store where I need a loaf of bread or I need a bottle of milk, and the neighbors could walk in, but if they wanted their main groceries, they'd bring their checks from where they worked and say, I've got to go to the grocery, would you cash my check for me?
Oh, so, and they got to where they weren't shopping for main groceries at your store.
Uh-huh.
Well, tell me about in the beginning years, though, what type of clientele came in? What type of things did you sell?
And see, we had all of Russelltown, which it was before the bypass was built. Mm-hmm. And they walked by, and you had a lot of Russelltown traffic and customers. And everybody, well, there wasn't been anybody up here. There was a few, I think, maybe on this street. No, there wasn't. It couldn't have been. But anyway, you had all the walk-in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you did have some that would stop for gasoline, and then when we did put in new gas pumps, well, we had the best gas business in town because it was cheaper than anybody else's.
Mm-hmm. You kind of kept it low so people would come.
Well, we had some company that come in and put the gas pumps in and did everything. And and you got a percentage of what you sold, and they kept it low.
Oh, okay.
So that, and it was just, they'd be lined up. I said, I would love to have had a...
an aerial shot.
Aerial shot of them. It's just like a dance, because this one pull in, that one pull out, and this one back up. And this.
How many pumps did you have?
We just had the two at the time, but it was just a constant stream of people there. And
When do you remember that being so booming as far as the gas lane business goes?
What was it, 65, Joe? Yeah, because I think that's when they signed, they wrote their name in the concrete. I think it was in 65, and it was just... But gas was 27 cents a gallon.
27 cents.
And that was the cheapest gas in town. And it was just...
You bought the store in 52, and it was a grocery store then, I guess.
Yes.
Did you sell other things too, but, you know...
No.
Any kind of over-the-counter medicines or anything like that?
Only aspirin and Vicks or whatever, toothpaste, and just... And it was Tony... There was a company called Tony Isle that came in. And they brought, they had all of this stuff, and they would come in and fill you up a rack, and then you reordered, and and if they had anything new come in, well, then you bought it.
Did you have fresh meat and eggs and milk?
Well, we had milk. Yeah, we had milk and eggs, and then I don't think we ever had any chickens, but we had pork chops. We got from Fisher's Meats in Louisville, and of course... Best bologna in town. If you don't believe it, you ask anybody to ever come in.
What made it the best bologna in town?
It was Fisher's, and it was cut fresh off of the roll.
No one else carried it in town?
Well, all the other grocery stores was going out downtown, and so it was in this area. And Joel, which was in the piece, and of course he'd always skin it for people and slice it for them, you know, and they always come back after.
That's hog dough?
And then some would want to come in, would want to buy a sandwich. They'd want a bologna sandwich. Well, you think, no big deal. You could cut a slice of bologna, and put it on a piece of bread, and let them have it. But the state... or your health department, no, you can't do that. You've got to
have to set it up differently to serve sandwiches.
And but then the next person that came in, well, they sold it that way, and it was no complaint. But it just...
Oh, so you never did turn yours into a sandwich shop too then?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Because it was going to take too much.
It just the state, it was not a grocery, it was a grocery store. You didn't sell sandwiches at a grocery store. It's funny how so many things have changed. Well, the man down here now he says it's a grocery and deli, but he sells no groceries other than the bottled drinks and cold drinks out of the refrigerator.
But I guess now he's got the option where he could move in a line of groceries if he wanted.
I don't know. I don't know how they've changed the laws or what they've done, but I do know that they've changed a whole lot of laws, and what the health department has.
Well, who all worked there at your grocery? Just you and your
husband?
You would take turns on the shifts, or you'd be there both?
Well, we lived right across the street. So
you did?
Yes. If you saw that he had a crowd, you'd go over. If they didn't have, well, you'd stay home.
Did the kids ever help out in the store?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. They learned real fast. He started walking at 8.5 months, going to the candy shelves and whatever. But then one daughter still works in the grocery store. She works for Kroger's.
Does she?
And she's worked off and on there ever since she got out of high school. Of course, she worked at the store. But the other one didn't work there. The next daughter, she didn't work there much because she was not that interested in it. And Joe worked there, and he was good. He and Lois were very good at it. And
Joe's your son who's here now.
But the other one, he was not interested in it. The other two weren't interested. Mm-hmm. You didn't know whether they wanted to play more than they wanted to work. So,
well, what was it like being a small business owner? Or were all the businesses small during that period? They were. They were kind of family owned and operated.
It was very nice. You knew everybody that walked in. Nearly everybody walked in that door. You knew everybody that lived in every house up and down the street, the whole neighborhood. You knew everybody. They came in. They told you their problems. That was the end of it. It was dropped right there. And they, if they needed something, they come to you, and you let them have it. And most of them paid you back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you corrected a child that was doing something that you thought they shouldn't do, the parent never said a word. And we'd been there 20-some years, and I got a phone call one day, and the mother was just raising Cain with me because I had corrected her children.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, I was devastated. But, I mean, the white people, and nor the colored people, ever objected to me correcting their children.
You mean if they were misbehaving in the store?
If they were misbehaving mm-hmm. in the store, or they're doing something they had no business doing, you corrected them. And they never said a word. And I had one woman, because we lived across the street from out in Russelltown, that she picked mine up and spanked her one day for being out in the street. And then she come and apologize. I said, no apology is necessary because you could have saved that child's life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, they were good friends. It was all friends that come into the store.
So when you say when people needed help, you would help them out. Did you have a? Were people able to charge things? You know, had a line
yes,
of credit,
yes,
and they would
yes.
pay when they were paid,
yes.
or
mm-hmm.
How did you work that? Did you?
Well, we just had a little book and put what they got and
mm-hmm.
give them one, and we kept one. And when they paid it, we give them the ticket, and that was it.
And that took care of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like?
And we lost very, very little money.
Most people would.
But considering being there 26 years or so, we lost very little
mm-hmm.
from people that were not. It got to the point that we didn't take any new credit. And we got to the point that someone would fill up their tank with gas and drive off.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of tried to watch, especially if it was somebody new. If it was somebody you knew, well, you knew you could get them. But I know one time, one man that lived in Clifton got the gas and drove off. And I had his license numbers, he drove off. And of course, the police was waiting for him by the time he got home.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had one young man come in and give me a check one day. And I told him, I said, I didn't know him, well, I'm so-and-so-and-so-and-so. I would get my checks good. And I said, okay, it better be good. So when my husband came into work, I went to the bank and I took the checks to deposit them. His check wasn't any good. So right then I turned it over to the police and they got him. Well, he was very surprised that
it happened that quick.
It happened that quick. But you knew everybody. And everybody worked together.
Mm-hmm.
Now it would take you 6 months to get it through the courts or something.
Probably. So you've seen a big change in that then,
oh,
the
yes.
way you've.
Uh-huh.
So you knew the police officers and the.
Oh, yes.
I mean, they really kind of watched out for the businesses
oh, yeah.
and things.
And they watched out for your children. If they was out on the street, they watched out for
mm-hmm.
them. I know one time we had some friends come in here from Maine and. Jamie Dobbins, who was a policeman, he was a colored boy, and they stopped and asked him if they knew where Stanley Giles lived, and he said, well, just follow me, I'll take you to it. And so here he comes, bringing him. So it's just, everybody knew everybody, and everybody worked together.
Mm-hmm. Well, as, you know, growing up, being here for so long, since you were younger, what type of relations did you have as far as the black and white? Was it strained? You know, everybody knew their place, or what was the?
Honey, I never found it strained until they started saying, you have got to like them.
Mm-hmm.
That you have got to do this and you have got to do that. I never found it strained in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And then it got to the point, unless you knew somebody, you got so that you was a little afraid of them.
Mm-hmm.
But
you mean at the end of your business, you know,
yeah,
in the 70s?
But when I was visiting my grandmother, as I told you that, she had a colored woman who come and did her laundry. And, of course, she stayed all day. Of course, it took a whole day to do
mm-hmm.
laundry on the board. But anyway, and I'm sure they never paid her maybe 50 cents a day or something to come and do it. But she never went home empty-handed. She took food home every time she went or whatever else. But we loved her. I mean, she was not so-and-so. She was Aunt Pliny. She was mm-hmm. Aunt.
What was her name? Aunt what?
Pliny, P-L-I-N-I-E, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But then she had a daughter, and Rachel Button. And she come after her mother got so she couldn't. And she they were all part of the family.
Right.
And then when we lived at Millville, we had Matt and Jim Edwards, who lived behind us. They come in from another road, so it made it behind us. And they were the most wonderful people that ever lived. I mean, and I know I'd be out cutting ground, and Daddy would be sowing wheat or whatever. And Jim didn't want me riding that cutting hair, and he had a sheepskin, and he went and got that sheepskin and brought that to me so that I could sit on that old, it was old metal seat on the cutting hair then. And he would bring me that last watermelon that was on the vine. I mean, just, mm-hmm. they were just wonderful people. And then, of course, Matt had a sister who lived out here in Russelltown, Mag Rucker. I mean, and they were just part of your family.
Mm-hmm.
And you accepted them as that. And I know when we lived at Millville Edwards would try to, he would be working for Daddy, and you'd try to get him to come and eat with you, and he wouldn't do it. He would not do it. He'd wait till you got through. And we never could get him to come and eat with mm-hmm. us, which was, now you think nothing about it, to sit down with some of them. But, and you, we wouldn't have that if he would have come and eat.
Right, he just kept it separate.
It was separate, and that was the way they kept it. But as...
And when you moved to town, though, in Versailles, and did you find that things were still as easy?
It was for me.
Or did blacks live in town? Did color?
Oh, yes. They owned one side of Lexington Street. And, of course, Luther Bland is on the city council now, and I asked him, I said, Luther, what happened? Why did they sell all that property on that side? He said, well, they wanted big cars, and they wanted to drink, and this, that, and other.
They don't own it anymore?
They don't own it anymore.
Yeah. So there was kind of a part of town of downtown Main Street that the blacks owned,
yes.
and there were businesses that were run by blacks and stuff,
uh-huh.
too?
Yes.
Did the whites go there ever, and blacks?
Well, Frank, Adams, he had Merch Adams, had a barbershop over there in one of their buildings, and people went over there and got their hair cut. So.
Now, he was a white man?
He was a white man,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Was his barbershop open to both blacks and whites? Or just?
I have no idea, because I didn't go over there. There was one barbershop there on Lexington Street, so they were close to the pool room, so that's
mm-hmm.
where my husband went.
Well, during the time of when they did integrate the schools and race relations across the nation were kind of bad, you know, because did you feel it here in Versailles? You know, was there tension? And
well, I guess there was, but I didn't feel it too much because I remember Agnes Jackson, who's out in Russelltown.
Well, now, you keep mentioning Russelltown. Was that predominantly black?
Colored people that lived across the railroad there.
Okay.
And she said that they told her, said, you better not bother those people. So...
She told their children,
their friends who would come in from out of town, that you better not.
They wanted to keep the peace. Then.
Yeah. So, I mean, I never saw anything, and I've always respected them greatly. And
mm-hmm.
and if I would see one walk on the street today that I knew then, I'd walk up and hug them just like I do everybody else.
So your store, when you opened it in the 50s, you had a black clientele.
Yes,
clientele,
very
but
much so.
Did other stores too, you know, the
yes,
clothing stores?
Yes,
and
yes, yes.
So there really wasn't any...
There was no difference, you know, that just that I ever knew.
Right.
Of course, I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't trying to find
right.
it. And it was just that way.
We're just about out of tape. I was going to ask you one more question,
okay.
and then we may try to set up another session. But I was wondering about how downtown celebrated different events, you know, were there 4th of July parades, Christmas time?
The only one I remember is the Armistice Day. And
when is that? I should know.
It was November the 11th.
Okay. And now it's Veterans Day?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we said all of it. We came to, they brought us from school up here. That was another time that I come up here to for sales. They brought us up here. We came up to Elm Street, which is up here by the water tower. And we marched down and through town. That was a parade. Mm-hmm. And then after the parade, they had a football game at the high school, which is up on Maple and Lexington. And they had burgers. The men had cooked burgoo mm-hmm. all night long, and we had burgoo. And that's the only celebration that I ever come to before we moved back to town mm-hmm. that I remember.
And it was a parade.
And it was a parade, right. and that they had the football game. That was their final football game of the season. And the men had stayed up all night cooking mm-hmm. that burgoo and everything that they put in it. And they give you a little cup of burgoo and maybe a napkin. I don't remember that, but I know they give you that burgoo, and I thought mm-hmm. that was the best stuff in the world. And I learned to make it, too.
Did you? I like burgoo. I had never tasted it before. Well, we are out of time with this tape. So thank you very much.